Black on black on black.
Hi. Welcome to the podcast.
Hella dope.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to Black on Black on Black. You're here with Big D.
Fantastic.
And
DJ Queen.
Okay. If this is your very first time listening to Black on Black on Black, we're here every 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. on Mondays. And it's a show about a Bay Area native and a transfer from the Sizzity South. We explore the rural San Francisco and larger Bay Area by finding scenes, creating memes, and
being obscene.
Listen to the show to find out what's going on in the city, where to find it, and to learn about the local artists who make it all happen.
Sorry, I'm trying to keep a hold of my ears right now because my headphones are hella loud. So yeah. If someone can turn my headphones down, no idea which one they are, but you know, just like slide some down. I don't know which one. Oh, I think that's the second one. Nope. Go back to the first one. Nope. The other direction. Go on the other side.
This is mine.
The first one. Try that first one.
Nigga, I tried.
Nigga, that first one on that side.
This one?
Yes.
That's Shane, my guy.
Are you sure?
Yes, because I already fucked with that. I'm sorry, y'all.
So basically, my ears are just going to like go off.
Your shit is over there.
Oh my God.
God damn. How long have you been in the studio? I'm so sorry, y'all. We are being extremely unprofessional.
First of all, you didn't tell me any of that, so I don't know what you. You know what?
Let's, oh my God,
there we go. Hi, everyone.
Let's fucking move past it because we have a very, very special guest today. While you work through your own fucking bullshit, our very special guest is Shane Zaldivar. Mm-hmm. And please say hi, Shane.
Hi. So Shane Zaldivar is a transgender educator, she, her pronouns, performer and community advocate who has called the Bay Area home since 2014. So we're not even going to talk about the before time. Since 2020.
We will through the segment.
Since 2020, she has served as manager of training and education for the San Francisco Office of Transgender Initiatives, which is the only office of its sort of being in this country. She is the creator of Pop-Up Drag Queen, a public art and drag project. She has performed throughout the Bay Area since 2016 and has performed with Banda Sin Nombre since 2017. Shane is also a member of both the original 2018 cast and the 2025 revival cast of the Compton's Cafeteria Riot Play. If you've not seen that, get in there.
I mean, we went last year and it was just absolutely amazing. Breathtaking.
Amazing. They give you food.
Oh yeah, I didn't eat there.
Oh, I took that before. I took them shits down.
Damn.
They gave you a pancake and a sausage, boy. I was about it and coffee.
Yeah.
In 2026, she received the Daphne Dorman Trans Artist Award and a Certificate of Honor from the San Francisco Board of Supervisors for her contributions to transgender visibility, culture enrichment, and public education. Across her work, Shane is committed to using storytelling to foster connection, visibility, and belonging. And she's one of our best friends.
Yes, we love Shane desperately.
Yeah. With that being said, today's show, we are really centering talking about trans experience on all different types of level, whether that be from a personal activism level, where Shane has come in to talk about her experiences, whether that be on a more of a macro level where we're thinking about political systems, institutions, how these things intersect with other isms such as racism, and thinking about it on very vulnerable personal levels. And all of this is going to be rooted in Shane's experience, with commentary from how we may interact with, how we can be more supportive as allies, co-conspirators. And so just want to say thank you to Shane to coming in and offering.
Shane,
yeah,
this is so important to us. Like, it really, really is. I mean, if you all don't know this, if you're living on our fucking rock, because if you haven't been listening to our show, we talk about these sorts of things. Like, trans people are under attack in America. They are.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they've been consistently under attack for years now, and with this resurgence of this new shitty and terrible administration coming back into the office, I mean, it's just gotten worse.
Yeah.
And so if we do not as allies, personally as an ally, do not provide a platform to talk about these sorts of things, then what the fuck are we doing?
Yeah, we all have to. We all have to start talking.
We have to do this because you know, and one thing that I will always say is that no matter if you think this shit don't affect you, it will.
It will.
It will.
Yeah.
And cis women who are out there, you would need to get your fucking shit together because it affects you just as much as anybody else. But anyways, I digress. I just want to say, like, it's incredibly important for us to have these sorts of conversations and to give people like Shane and any others, like, the platform to speak. You know, it's time.
Mm-hmm. And since this is going to be such a content heavy, we won't have a Black Happenings. Yeah. And I think we're going to only spotlight certain events in between the session. So just wanted, since we are having a show very much focused on sort of trans activities, trans liberation and activism, want to highlight, because welcome to Pride Week, bitches. Welcome to Pride Week. If you are not ready, get ready.
I've been getting ready for weeks. I've been getting ready for weeks.
Do you? And also, we just want to remind people, like we always do, that trans is a riot, it is a march, it is a protest. It is not just about celebrating what we have won, but also talking about what we have left to win, right? Yeah. And so, just want to highlight that the trans march is this Friday. It's my favorite event that happens during Pride. It'll be 6 p.m. on Friday. It starts from Dolores Park and goes all the way downtown. Definitely come. We'll highlight some other things after certain segments, but just wanted to start already kicking down the door with just that.
Yeah.
And with that, you got a would you rather for us?
Yeah. I've been working on this would you rather for a minute. So I was like trying to finagle it somehow.
Finagle.
Yeah. Okay. So let me see if I've got it right. Okay. So would you rather start a foundation in which you're able to offer like political refugee safety within the U.S.? So like if you are just trapped in like a state that is like definitively going against your rights constantly, and you want to be able to get out, you are like the head of this foundation of this organization that allows people to move into states that like better like fit their support, whatever. Right now, mind you, like the intricacies of this could be far more difficult. But yeah, or would you rather that, or would you rather like be the founder of a new political party that is directly more aligned with like who we are? Because we admit that both, you know, the Democrats and Republicans can be very, very skewed and not very highly focused on a lot of different issues. Start your own political party that you know for a fact will gain popularity.
We are going to die.
Yeah, no, for sure.
Yeah. But I just want y'all. We will be assassinated.
Yeah. But
you know, was the first option?
But you know for a fact that this political party will like eventually be so popular it will actually compete against and it will
like hit. How long?
until it's popular?
Yeah.
I can't say. Like you will just know. Or the first one is you are now like a foundation has been handed to you, like it's created where you are able to. It's a basically a political refugee organization.
Yeah.
We are able to get people out of states and stuff that are like directly affecting their rights and moving them into other states that will like better help them.
I mean, the thing is that with certain states, I mean, this is where like, do we just create sanctuaries in certain states and just hoard people there? That doesn't necessarily mean safer for the rest of us who are in our little enclaves, right? Now we're sort of like giving states to like people who can then just weaponize that and all of a sudden come and attack us all together. Like I feel in the long run, we're just making certain states deeper targets for the federal government. And it's the problem doesn't go away. Even though we are immediately helping people, we are creating sort of a situation in which now a lot of states will be able to gain power in a way that further like accelerates fascism and actually then puts whatever few states are doing this like really, like they're really gonna be targeted.
Well, I mean, in that instance though, let's just look at, because like honestly, I think there'd be a lot of refugees in Texas, hella refugees coming out of Florida. There'd be a lot of people that are just getting the fuck out.
Yeah.
So that alone will affect the House of Representatives. Just because of population numbers alone. So I think that'll be helpful, you know?
Yeah, but that Senate, that's Senate.
The Senate will, the judicial courts,
the judicial courts are going to be a fucking problem.
Yeah,
the court systems are going to be an issue.
Right.
Like I hear that in the House of Representatives, but it heavily, like really, really gives a lot of power in the Senate and the in our judicial system, which are life appointments.
Yeah.
And circuit courts, where people are just gonna, I might have just have to go ahead and give up my own life, I guess,
for the political party.
I guess I'm gonna give up my own life for the political party, because I'm gonna die. We are going to die, but that is that
probably
you're not gonna survive that.
Shame. And one of the reasons why I asked this question is because with me and Shane both being from the South, like I personally sometimes feel like a political refugee. Yeah. I don't sometimes. I feel like that all the time.
Yeah, I've met people who
I fled. I was like, I got to get out.
Yeah.
And I stand 10 toes down on it.
Maybe I'll end up like Assata Shakur. Like I'll get smuggled out to like Cuba or something somewhere.
You better hope.
Not Cuba. Somewhere else though.
Sure. Sure. what about you, Shane?
I think the instant gratification of helping people with the
first one
foundation feels good for me, because I know that at least helps people now, and I see your point with the long run.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess because I'm more attached to people's experience with that now, I'm like, all right, let's just help those people and put them somewhere where they feel safe now.
Mm-hmm.
And
I think there's a lot of funding going towards that right now from certain states. It's just the federal government is like really clamping down in ways that like really target the pot of money that's available to expand those services or even continue those services.
Right.
And I just feel like in the long run, it won't achieve the kind of thing we actually need to achieve with just having another political party that rises to power and actually is like doing the work on behalf of people.
Yeah, I don't think
either one is a wrong answer.
No. There is no wrong.
I don't think either one is a wrong answer. This is one of those
where like I'm having a really hard time picking, because oh my god, like if we did start like a political party that actually puts up a fight against like the Democrats and Republicans and does get elected versus whatever the fuck, what are they called, libertarians? I don't know. Mm-hmm. Like you know, it actually like becomes another party, like that is like world changing. Mm-hmm. Because whatever happens in the U.S. like affects the world.
Mm-hmm.
On the other end, that instant gratification would be really nice.
Which one are you choosing?
I don't know.
I like the second option, in that like it kind of like the way you're describing it now, it like insinuates that there's like fight associated with it, right?
Yeah.
Where there's like an active pushback against what's happening now. So
yeah,
there's more of a guardrail for the folks who would go to those foundations to begin with, and I feel like historically that's what's worked. So more of like an uprising of sorts, like collectively.
Yeah.
So at least in the historical context, there's some potential for a great outcome if like fight is attached to option two.
Yeah,
I will say I think I'm gonna only select option one just because I have a kid.
Yeah,
and death is imminent with the other one.
Yeah, death is imminent.
Death is imminent.
On the come up will be so real though, because
the come up will be real.
It's like to get to a level that is of where you actually are official party at the federal level, you're gonna have to have so many different wins.
Yeah,
that gather people and that's gonna be a beautiful
and it's
momentum.
Amazing. It's absolutely amazing. But I'm like, if I was not only if I was childless but didn't want kids.
Yeah,
I think I'm in that. Yeah.
I think it'd be
easier for me to make that decision, but I just don't see a way for us to be able to cement and solidify a party like that without being hunted down by the
CIA. No, there's no way. You're going to die.
Yeah.
There's for sure.
And
for
I can't.
Like, you were... Yeah. There's only one path. Either you're going to die or Assata Shakur is going to be your pathway.
Right.
That's what I'm going to hope for.
Yeah. I mean, it's almost like Shane said, it's almost like a revolution.
It is.
It's what you're doing.
It would absolutely be a revolution.
It's a revolution.
Because we are a two-party system.
Yeah.
You are upheaving that. You are absolutely destroying a norm. It is going to take a revolution.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you want a revolution? Woo!
There's a revolution. Woo! Woo! Okay. All right. we're going to get into our first piece of music. Yeah. And just so y'all know, our music selections are actually going to be kind of short today because we have a lot to talk about. But yeah, what are your first plan?
Well, I just want to talk a little bit about the playlist. Shane put it together.
Yes, you did, Shane.
This opening, there's two opening ones I added just because yours go really good with the other segment.
Yeah.
But they're keeping in line that this playlist is making space for parts of the queer and trans experience that don't always get centered during Pride. And Pride is absolutely, as Shane was putting it, a celebration of joy, resilience, and survival.
Yeah.
But the queer experience often includes feelings of longing, loneliness, rejection, desire, and the lifelong search for belonging in a world that often tells us people that we are too much, not enough, or simply not who we know and ourselves to be.
Yeah.
And so this is really hitting on all of those different notes. I've listened to a majority of this. It's beautiful. We're going to start with two songs that I just added at the very beginning. So first that we're gonna have is Love Is by Honey Dijon featuring Camila Waheed. Enjoy, everyone.
Yeah.
What's happening? What's happening?
You're doing great.
I hate this.
Is the music up, bro, on the thing?
Oh. Shut up.
You're doing great.
They say love is love. He loves me platonically, yet romantically I'm floored. His love language is touch, and I need more. They say love is love. They say love is love is the message that lives in my core. I dance for love, I work for love, I am love, mi amor. Agape, eros, take my hand, are you sure? No worries, duck and hide when you're by my side. My wonder twin, my best friend, my filiate diverse, extended to the metaverse, love was never meant to hurt. Love is love, love is a state of mind. What I give is what I get, what I think I attract, so I think of you, my love. You are a whisper upon my full lips, a crush, mysterious prince or princess, non-binary, legendary, your twist is my type. For love I fight or take flight if you ain't loving me right. I love in a way most ain't ready for. You breathe out, I breathe in, you breathe in, life begins. Now don't get it twisted, I love me some me. I ain't going front, it was a lesson well learned, scars once earned, now fuel for the only well deserved. They say love is love. Love is an energy, 528 Hz frequency vibrating through me, loving you is easy. The ultimate test is to love thy enemy, and I love you all. Watch me work this love is the reason my head is held high. DJ Love helped me survive, so I let go my love, has no pride. They say love is love.
They say love.
They say love.
They say love.
Sí.
la femme c'est magnifique, si la femme c'est fantastique, si la femme c'est magnifique, si la femme c'est fantastique. Mais ça n'est Dijon, c'est fantastique.
And we're back with Black on Black on Black. You're here with D Fantastic
and DJ Queen and me,
Shane Zaldivar.
Yes. Thank you for joining us, Shane. This is our last Pride Month episode because, to be quite frank, we'll be recovering next Monday.
Yeah, so we will not be all.
We will not be here. We'll probably do this as a replay.
Yes.
But I just wanted to let y'all know in case you were like looking to tune in. Nah, we're done.
No. We I mean, we'll come back afterwards. Like, we're not done.
We will come back. Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, I'm going on vacation for a couple weeks, but yes.
Yeah, yeah. I will be back.
Yeah, exactly. So I kind of wanted to go over just like some quick statistics about the trans experience in the U.S. So as of 2025, 2.8 million people ages 13 plus identify as trans. Among transgender adults, roughly one third identify as trans women, one third as trans men, and one third as non-binary. So it's like one third each. And this is interesting. So in regards to where most trans individuals live in regions of the U.S., that would be the South is actually the most, with around 722,000 people there.
That's interesting.
I know, right? I was like, this
I
is...
I was expecting that statistic.
Right. I was like, I have to say this, right?
Are they living covertly?
I don't know.
Maybe. Interesting. Okay. Yeah.
The second will be the West over here with 556,000.
Yeah.
Then the Midwest, 455,000. And then the last is the Northeast at 411,000.
So interesting. I mean, it's the same like where majority of black people live, right?
Right.
Is in the South as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And then this is interesting that kind of plays into that, which has me thinking. The race and ethnicity distribution of adults and youth who identify as transgender is very similar to just the U.S. population overall. So race and ethnicity estimates for adults and, you know, the report that they had reflects trends from prior research that found Latinx people or Latine people, American Indian or Alaska Native, and biracial multiracial groups appear more likely to identify as transgender than white people, with black people being the least likely to identify as trans, according to this data.
Maybe to self-identify.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot to kind of dive into that if you want to kind of dive into that if anyone has thoughts on those stats in particular.
Yeah.
But I just kind of want to highlight that.
Yeah. You know? And so I think what we want to do is like strike a good chord with maybe providing a little bit of statistics and then diving into like real life experiences.
Yeah.
And so Shane, I want to kick it over to you. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and your journey to understanding your own gender identity and the nuances of that?
Yeah, I think, you know, for me, when I think back of like growing up, I think the instances of just recognizing that I was different was other people telling me I was different, right? Like, you know, just kind of being more myself and being told like, oh, you're not supposed to do that, like girls do that, or being teased and ridiculed in that way.
Yeah.
So just kind of constantly being faced that whatever I was doing inherently was not fitting into what I was supposed to be doing.
Mm-hmm.
And that happened both in Belize, that happened in Florida. These are the places I grew up in. And yeah, just kind of navigating that was hard because like there was a part of me that wanted to fit the bill, you know, when it came to making my family happy, making life easier for myself with connecting with other schoolmates, with being able to have the childhood I saw other kids getting to have. But I was like such a visible and easy target in just the ways that I was, whether it was my voice was high pitched, I was just more effeminate in nature, I leaned towards feminine things. And, you know, at the time, I didn't have the language around transgender.
Yeah.
Like, I kind of knew already that I was, at that point, attracted to men. So that was, like, more recognizably, like, the taboo I was holding. So I always felt like I was holding a secret while simultaneously having to navigate what does being myself in a world look like when I'm constantly being told I'm doing it wrong.
Right. That's hard. I mean, one of the things that I think, at least, like, I think we can relate to as Black women, is, like, there's just this constant fight of, like, this is what it's supposed to be like, what you're supposed to be doing, you know, and I know, like, in the South, like, there's this very, very consistent idea of what femininity is supposed to be, and so that just the combination of it all must have been really, really difficult for you, you know. And it's really interesting to see with little kids how tribalism it develops very early on, you know. And I mean, I'm fortunate to say that we live in a place where a lot of schools and everything are very, very inclusive and not pushing any sort of gender norms or anything like that. But does this still happen? Yeah, you know. But it was worse when we were growing up.
Yeah.
In the 90s. It was much, much worse.
Yeah. I think we all do get subjected to these like ridiculous norms, right, that are predetermined before any of us ever got here.
Yeah.
Are ancient and archaic, kind of don't evolve with the times. Even though life has evolved, sort of what modern life is, but there's nothing like having not having the language to describe yourself, and then having people tell you the language to describe yourself is like it's like a really traumatic thing that I think a lot of kids and younger people go through.
Yeah,
that adults also equally go through as well.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm curious, Shane, because I definitely heard you talk about sort of like you started noticing those differences and like being and cueing into it and being harder to hide. When did you start thinking about it as things you needed to hide? Like, when did you start recognizing that these differences are things that needed to be hide, and how did you, like, just sort of like when that started for you?
Yeah.
I mean, as far back as I can remember, really, because like I think, you know, it's as typical and common with, like, you know, queer trans people. Like, you look down the Barbie aisle and they tell you you're not supposed to look at that. Mm-hmm. You know, experiences similar to that. But I remember navigating school in particular, right? Like, as a child and as a young person, like, school is so much of where you spend your time.
Yeah.
And you're dealing with a bunch of strangers, essentially kids. Mm-hmm. But they learn from their parents and, you know, what is it when I go to school and I have to, like, go home and ask, like, content warning or whatever. Like, I have to be like, hey, mom, what does faggot mean?
Yeah.
You know? And, like, that word came up for me in my upbringing as young as, like, third grade.
Yeah.
You know? And before that, it was just like, you know, Shane is such a girl. And it was done in a way that was not warm or inviting, right?
Right.
So me recognizing that was the sort of thing that people were going to land on, and that came with all the different mistreatment, you know. It was just very early on that I knew that I had to behave a certain type of way in order to mitigate some of how I was going to be treated in these spaces.
To basically asking for acceptance without directly asking for it, doing the actions to think that bring acceptance.
I guess it's more just like being quiet. I think that was really hard about my upbringing. Like, I feel like I didn't have more conversations with other people until later in my life, because I knew if I opened my mouth in third grade with, like, don't get me wrong, like, I'm queer, so, like, at a young age, I'm going to show the signs of being queer, but at the same time, as a survival tactic to avoid getting you know, mistreated or taunted, yeah, or like, and simultaneously have to do cursive and my homework, you know, like, yeah, whatever. It was a sense of like, if I just stay quiet, like,
keep my head down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No.
I'll make it through.
And that, I did that for a very, very long time.
Yeah.
I'm
yeah.
sorry. That, yeah. That's hard. And in those moments when you found yourself being quiet, was it, you know, were you just trying to find your community or your friends? And did you find yourself trying to, like, befriend more boys, you know, when you were growing up, just to somehow fit in? Or was it, like, a just whoever?
Or was it just keep to yourself, yeah, no one kind
yeah.
of thing?
Yeah.
Those Floridians were rough.
Like. Yeah.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah, also, there's the context of all this being in Florida.
Yes, remember, this is in Florida, y'all.
Like, I feel like when I started hearing more about the articles of Florida Man, I was like, I knew those people as, like, my classmates, and I know yeah. their kids, and they're, and so, like, I was like, this is not shocking or surprising. I mean, don't get me wrong, there was, like, a few friendships I would have, but then those would be complicated. So, for example, like, if they were other boys, because there was a likelihood that I had crushes on them,
and I had
to navigate a sort of sense of, like, yeah, you're my friend, and I already know at a very young age what it is to be attracted to somebody, mm-hmm. and I can't say anything about
yeah.
it.
Right, right, mm-hmm. right. Yeah, no, that adds another layer of complexity.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, especially when we're, you know, we talk about, like, kids things, right? Where you're, like, doing sleepovers, mm-hmm. you're doing whatever, right? There's almost, like, this inherent thought of, like, oh, yeah, if you have just an all-girl or an all-boy sleepover, you know, it's be safe, whatever.
My parents were like, nah. My parents never, it didn't matter if it was an all-girl.
Right.
My parents were always like, nope. My mom was like, is there a man that lives in that house? Mm-hmm. You can't
right.
go.
Right.
You can't yeah. go. Right. Is there an uncle that sometimes visits that house? You right. can't go.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's sleepovers have gotten complex. I won't dive into that now.
Yeah. That's, yeah. That's trauma.
Yeah. But, yeah.
One funny experience that comes up for me that I didn't remember but my mom told me about was mm-hmm. in second grade, there was a boy, and funny enough, I do remember the crush. His name was Isaac Carvajalino.
Oh,
he only got full name. Yeah. Full name. Okay.
Isaac.
Okay, Isaac, if you're after
me. Let me tell you, those crushes, even at a young age, were intense.
Oh, no, for sure. I remember my first crush, first name and last name.
How like, did you? Well, they were so unrequited. I'm like, oh, my
so
God.
Yeah.
Every hug, every
he was so
goodbye.
Stupid. Oh,
like, every
so
conversation.
Dumb. Deeply, so deeply unrequited. You yeah. know, fuck that nigga.
Damn, we don't even get to the story. You just go ahead.
I could be there with you. Yeah, so what ended up happening is that I, and again, my mom told me this story. I totally forgot. I wrote a letter to him saying how I wanted to marry him.
Ooh.
And
spicy.
This is over second there? Grade.
Stop.
Like, well, and
it's very cute.
It's but, so
but,
cute.
But they called the parents in because of it.
Right.
So they of called course. In his parents. They called in my parent, my mom.
Right.
And it was a whole thing. And I, this part I didn't know about. Like, I don't even remember writing the letter, for
right.
being honest.
Right, yeah.
But it was a situation that they were, like, called in for a conversation.
Yeah.
Maybe I think the other parents brought it up. And my mom was like, they're fucking 6 years old. Like, this is just how they say they care about each other. Like, this
yeah.
is not a reason to take me out of my work.
Yeah.
Like you know.
This is real.
But I'll be.
I mean,
if I reflect on myself at that time, I meant what I said.
No.
You were to marry. Baby, you experienced love.
But yeah, no, like, that's the type of things that were, like, kind of happening even mm-hmm. at a young age where, like, I might have not thought of all the dynamics I think about now, but mm-hmm. that's, like, a version of an example yeah. of how it existed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is fucking intense.
Yeah.
Intense. Yeah. Yeah. Well, now, connecting that to present day, Shane, what motivated you to become involved in advocacy or activism? Was it that letter?
That's oh, yeah, that's totally. What I'm my denial from Isaac is why I am an activist today.
Yes.
No, I think, like, once I kind of got the picture for myself that I am trans, that I'm queer to begin with, not necessarily just trans,
mm-hmm.
that there's still so much to fight for.
And what order did it come in for you? Because like there's sexual orientation, yeah. And then there's like, yeah, did the realization of queerness come first or trans come first?
I think for me, if I'm being honest, like I recognized that I was attracted to men, boys, right away.
Okay.
Like I knew, yeah. Like, mm-hmm. Oh, I'm supposed to be, you know, married to Sarah or Jane, and here I am looking at Isaac real hard. And I knew, yeah. Like inherently, like that was not okay. So yeah. Once I got the sense of that, I didn't necessarily attach, like, I didn't know what gender expression was, but I know that I was expressing myself effeminately. Mm-hmm. Like, I could yeah. enter into a new school. We moved all the time, so I had new schools. Instantly open my mouth, talk, faggot.
Yeah.
So, you know, like, I think in that, there was me just naturally being myself, but yeah. For me, I was holding on to like, I'm gay, I gotta. Whew. The hardest one was Belize because I went to school there, and yeah. It's Catholic schools, and I went to an all boys school for high school.
Oh my God.
Mind you, that was my favorite year of high school. Like, really fun. I have my best memories there, but yeah. Leading up to it, like, I remember the panic.
The anxiety.
I had that summer leading to my first year of high school because I'm like, I know I'm going through puberty right now.
Yeah.
How the fuck am I going to handle this yeah. with these boys next to me in their uniforms?
Right.
Anyway.
I can only imagine.
So I held on to
this
that.
Such a traditional queer story.
Oh,
right.
Yeah.
But then it was in college when I got to like play with gender expression, mm-hmm. like Halloween costumes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I did drag, yeah. And that was a really big moment for me. I remember the first time I did drag, like after I came off the stage, mm-hmm. It was like really raw. Like my yeah. friends saw me and I kept saying like, that felt so good, that felt so good. They were like worried about me. I get it.
Yeah.
But even I wasn't prepared for that. It was yeah, this overwhelming yeah. sense of like, there's something here.
Yeah.
And at that time, I thought it was drag. So I did drag in Miami, and I came and moved here and pursued drag. Then it was here I learned more about trans people, was yeah. exposed to that community,
yeah.
and was like, oh, fuck.
Right.
Ding, mm-hmm. You know?
Mm-hmm, right.
And it was a slow thing. It was very much like, let me try this on. And then it was kind of like, duh.
Right.
You know? So yeah. And that's just how it worked out for me. You know, I think everybody has their different journey of that. And I think when I look back to, like, I think as a kid, I did always think, like, if I could press the magic button to be a girl,
yeah.
that would have been the easiest thing. But that was kind of the only sort of thought I can land on that makes me feel like I maybe had a sense of connection to what I'm doing now.
Do you think if you had more exposure to the language around the trans identity and what that looked like, that that would have been a very positive and welcoming and helpful thing earlier on in your life?
I think so. You know, like, seeing kids having that now,
yeah.
like, I, you know, I know there's a lot of, like, controversy with that, and, mm-hmm. like, I think being a parent in any situation is just going to be hard.
It's hard as hell, man.
You know? So, like, I can only imagine, but I think for me, being exposed to different figures of that, I think I would have been able to at least explore that earlier for myself, because, like, the moment I would lean into anything feminine, slap on the hand, I'm not allowed to do that.
Yeah. Right.
So it didn't really give me the room to even imagine that possibility. I kind of saw myself as like, well, I guess I'm going to wear button-ups and, you know, yeah. I don't know.
The long side.
Yeah. You know, like, I have to be a man, so yeah. this is what it is.
Right.
And just kind of have to exist in, like, finding the best possible path of that.
Yeah.
So for me, like, finally being gay in college in Miami, that was fun and I had a good time. But there was a whole other thing that happened when I did drag for the first time.
Yeah. Right, right, yeah. right. No, that makes sense. I'm wondering if it was almost like when you did drag for the first time, almost like a sense of like coming home finally, you know? Because I can imagine that you might have felt like, oh my God, like this is it. Like this is actually me. You know,
it's so funny because God, the wig I had was dusty. The clothes I had was bad. But I looked in that mirror and you couldn't tell me otherwise. Like I had legs for days.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
Yeah,
and I did some J-Lo combination number where I'm just doing this, thinking I'm everything.
Mm-hmm.
So you know. Like, there's a video somewhere. But I think it was just internally, even being able to look at myself in a type of light that I just was not allowed before.
Right. Yeah. No, that makes sense.
And then if you could connect it to how, so your journey to coming out here and then diving deeper into your flavor of activism and advocacy.
Yeah, I mean, the truth is, I think I kind of stumbled on it, mm-hmm. you know? Like, yeah. I wish I could say, like, oh, yeah, I planned to sell it. No. I moved to California to pursue cannabis.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, talk about that journey.
Which is so funny because I'm amongst all of us, like, I'm the pothead now. Extremely.
College was my time. I did it.
I'm not high right now. Aren't you proud of me?
Babe, do you? Realize. You're sober, yeah. Whatever, do you?
Yeah, the original plan was to become a cannabis activist, yeah. Open a shop in Belize, and, like, you know, really wanted to just kind of settle there and make that work. But then that's what brought me here to Oaksterdam. Oaksterdam alumni, hey.
Yay.
But then I fell in love with the Bay Area and San Francisco and all of its queerness and how I could be that. And so there were points of living here that were really tough, like pick bread off a trash can tough. And I was like, I would rather do that than go back to Florida. I made it fucking work. And so things like that, like, you know, I got a job. Pop-up drag queen was honestly designed because I needed money. I was like, okay, I work at the ferry building. Yeah. I see people making balloons. Yeah. I see people playing music. I don't know how to do that shit, but I have a sparkly dress. Let me just try this thing out and see if it works. And listen, at that time, I was buying $5 footlongs and splitting them in half. One half was for breakfast. The other half was for dinner. So I was like, listen, if I shake my ass for 5 hours and I earn $10, that's two.
So
literally, I was just like at that kind of avenue and juncture to even come up with the idea of that. And then, like, oh, look at that. It's art and activism.
Yeah. isn't it crazy? One thing that I feel like I can identify that most is, like, it is so insane how just adamant we were about never going back to the South. Like, I, at one point, when I first moved out here and I was, like, living on my own in Walnut Creek and I just, like, wasn't making enough money, like, I was Uber Eatsing and, like, working, like, 9 to 5, like, Monday through Friday. I was, like, getting it, but I was, like, I cannot go back. Like, I'm a political refugee. I can't go back.
Really?
But, like, it's serious. Like,
POC and queer people, you would literally have to drag them kicking and screaming back to the South.
Yeah.
Like, it should be studied and noted that they are, like, no.
Well, it's like, I had this conversation with someone recently who's married, a black guy who's married to a non-black woman. And, like, she toys with the idea of, like, going to Texas and everything. And he's like, I'm telling you right now, we will be in a long-distance relationship.
Well,
I'm sure you feel this way too. Like, there's a sense of, like, you miss it. There's a lot of history there. There's a lot of, like, nostalgia with things, you know. But it's like every single time within 24 to 48 hours that I'm there, I'm like, oh damn, them niggas back on that bullshit. Like, it's within like 48 hours, and it's like, for me, I'm fortunate enough that it's not family related. Yeah. But it's stuff. You go to the store, you do whatever, and it's like, God. Damn, man. Wow.
Yeah, I just knew that if I went back, the likelihood of me being able to escape again was, like, low or hard.
Yeah.
I was going to have to basically do everything I did all over again just to be at this point. Right. So I was like, no.
Yeah.
I think the most risque and sort of half fun, mostly fun, but, like, at that time, I just started to get to know Banda Sin Nombre. Mm-hmm. I invited them to the Knob Hill Theater because they had a strip contest.
Oh, I remember you telling me.
And if you won, you got $300.
Really?
And so I was doing that type of shit for money.
Nice.
Which was so fun. At the time, it was kind of like, you know, I had went one because I was curious and I saw this concert thing. I was like, nobody's here. You just need bodies.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, is it okay for any gender expression? And they were kind of like, we don't care, just play music and get naked.
Yeah,
I'm like, okay, fine. And so I had to do that in front of Hannah and all these other people, like, for money. And you know what? Honestly, one of my best numbers. Hannah still remembers it.
One of your best community.
I love that. I love that, though. I love that.
Well, from that perspective, what challenges remain the most urgent from your perspective?
For me or for community?
I think for both. I want to hear for both.
It's hard to speak on behalf of community. I guess, just from what I know, all the statistics, right? Mm-hmm. There was a term I learned from the World Health Organization called social determinants of health.
Yeah.
And it's literally just saying that health is not just like healthcare in a hospital. Health is all of these other factors mm-hmm. in life that you need to survive. Employment, yeah. housing, mm-hmm. Community.
Proximity to grocery stores, all those things.
For trans people, I think the way that things are now, it makes their access to all of these things that we all need to survive extremely difficult. And those statistics get higher. We see what's happening around the United States with legislation. It's been documented. There's a journalist, Erin in the Morning, and I think she got this number from the Williams Institute, that there's since the original Trump administration, so the first, but up till now, there's been over 400,000 queer people moving around the United States.
Yeah.
And it's one of the largest mass migrations of people in modern history.
Yeah.
But that's how it is right now. So I think for that, it's kind of that seeking of safety, survival, just ability to be and breathe and not have to be so on guard for your livelihood. I think that generally that's a problem for the community. And for me, I don't know. I think this is a common experience. It's just exhaustion. I feel like when you come from this type of experience, you enter the work, a lot of times people who receive services end up then later becoming the provider. But it's this sort of you never stop being in adjacent sort of spaces to all the hardships you've gone through while still trying to fight for better or to help your own or to make change. So I think there's just a sense of exhaustion that mm-hmm. comes with this where someone else do it.
Why not? Let's get in there.
Yeah, that is honest to God. I'm sure I'll mention it more later, but we need more of that. We definitely need more representation mm-hmm. in our voices, but we need allies to basically be the barrier of advocating for our humanity, because they're not talking to trans people. The people who oppress trans people are not talking to trans people.
Of course not.
But if there's middle grounds in families or where they're willing to listen a little more, making those small changes, I think matter personally. Because there's just a sense of making trans this feared monster based on all these falsehoods, and scapegoat exactly for all the other problems. And so we need other people to rationalize with other folks who might be transphobic if they have that ability. That's labor.
It's a skill.
It's labor.
Yeah.
And that's kind of my work and the work I do with training. But if more people do that simultaneously mm-hmm. and to have that conversation to be name the trans person who got in your way today.
Right.
Yeah. Name the trans person who stole your eggs.
Please.
Right.
We're not getting in the way. So, rationalizing it to people where it's you have this, hate or, treating people in a way all based on shit that's not actually happening in your livelihood. Wouldn't it be so much easier to actually identify problems and just leave
real
people alone?
Problems.
Just leave them, they're just doing their thing,
It's so crazy to me because there's so many parallels between what is happening with the trans community, what has happened historically with Black community. Not to say that the trans community is not Black community. I also want to say that.
Of course, yeah. There's intersection. There's a deep intersectionality there.
So that squarely does put it within the Black community.
Yeah.
Trans issues is not a white issue, Black people. This is a human issue. We are part of that. They are part of us. We are part of them.
Yeah.
But there's so many parallels in what you were just saying. Even hearing that 400,000 trans individuals are migrating brings to me the Great Migration Great Migration period, when millions of Black people move from the South out to the West Coast and to the North.
Yeah.
Right. In search of probably similar things of just safety. economic mobility and just a sense of belonging somewhere that isn't actively fighting against your life every single day.
Totally. Yeah.
You know, like, so many parallels. And so, like, the tactics are not new. The tactics that are being used are not new. They're rooted, they're fucking lazy, you know, because of how not new they are. The only thing that's not lazy about them is how on y'all ass it is.
Yes.
Like, how much they put into putting out these same sort of narratives of that you don't need to be scared of taxes or Trump or military. You need to be scared of a trans woman going to your bathroom.
Right.
That's what's gonna harm you today. No, it's not.
No.
It's absolutely fucking not.
No.
And so, like, a lot of this is just a boogeyman.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
It's just the story of a boogeyman that has been told to fit whatever narrative that the person controlling the boogeyman really wants to happen.
And exactly. We'll talk more about it later, I'm sure, but, like, I think it also plays into, like people's policing of gender along with, like, trying to, what's the word called? Like, at least for me, like, talking in some of what we've spoken about already and, like, this example, there's a sense of, like, I have to prove my masculinity and to deny you your identity as a trans woman or to, like, make sure I label you as other. Yeah. That protects my masculinity for myself and for anyone around who might have maybe witnessed that interaction.
Mm-hmm, right.
And a sense of, like, you know, and when I think of my youth, you know, I think all of those kids, like, I think of this idea of, like, if they point the finger at me, like, if they identify me, and I actually did have one guy message me on Facebook to be like, I'm really sorry I was mean to you, I'm gay, like, and, like, it was a sense of, like, you know, he like, admitted it. He was like, I participated in that because I knew that that would protect me, and I feel shitty. I think about it, like, I somehow found you here, this, and I wanted to say this.
Yeah.
I was like, all right, David.
Oh my gosh. That does nothing for me.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thanks.
But the trauma still lives on, but I guess thanks a bunch.
At least it helps in the context here where these are the other things playing in, like, an anthropological, sociological sort of setting of, like, people adding to why they would even give in to that sort of sentiment.
It kind of reminds me of the assimilation of whiteness and what happened with Irish people.
Of course.
And that they came here not being white.
Right. Same with the Italians.
So in order to, like, prove their whiteness, to, like, assimilate and gain power, they started pointing the finger at black people and being like, no, they're apes, not us.
Yeah.
They're apes, not us. We are white. We are normal. We are night white people. We are good people. Though they're those people. Those are the ones you need to attack.
Well, this was less about the Irish and the Italians doing it themselves, and more so the politicians and stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, actually, like,
but they bought into it.
They bought into it.
We all have self determination.
Oh, of course, yeah. Yeah.
There's a political thing going on right now, and individuals need to fight against that.
Of course, yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's a funny example, but I do think of, like, Wicked, where it's this sense of, like, there's a sense
the
of
movie,
like,
or the franchise,
the movie, the story, where it's this sense of, like, you know, a way to unify people is to find, like, a common ground, like, evil or bad that everybody can kind of point to.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's a silly modern example, but I think it's true in that people still navigate and operate in that way. And
well, it's about tribalism, and it's very interesting because tribalism is deeply instinctual and actually did serve a purpose back in the fucking day. But, like, I mean, we did slaughter the Neanderthals for no fucking reason. But
all right, and on that note, we're gonna dive back into.
But I'm saying tribalism doesn't have a place now, but it is an instinct that we have to fight against.
I mean, it's anthropological. It's how human beings organize themselves. There's like reasons to, like, study that and sort of understand the mentality behind how people organize and create safety for themselves and how people oust other people.
Right.
But girl, we're going to hop back into our playlist. We're going to play you a couple of songs and then come right back. Please enjoy Any Other Way by Jackie Shane.
Here you come again. And you say that you're my friend. But I don't know why you're here. She how I feel. Tell her that I'm happy. Tell her that I'm gay. Tell her I wouldn't have it any other way. Broken heart. But when you see my baby, here's what you say. Tell her I wouldn't have it any other way. Say goodbye. I think you'd better go right now, or you might see me cry. But when you see my baby, this is what you say. Tell her I wouldn't have it any other way.
Since my fears, these gay thoughts would always haunt me. I pray God would take it from me. It's hard for you when you're fighting, and nobody knows it when you're silent. I'd be by the phone, standing Nicky morning into dawn. Only place I feel like I belong. Strangers make you feel so loved, you know. And I'm happy by the way that I made that jump, that leap of faith. I'm happy that it all worked for me. I'ma make my fans so proud of me. Oh, I know that you want to cry, but it's much more to life than dying over your past mistakes and people who do dirt on your name.
Thank you. you off like sunrise on the backs of your thigh. I'm gonna pray you this prayer that I keep in my mind.